Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the Maroon Friday edition of the Yard. Isn't it wonderful that we live in a country that we can celebrate Maroon Friday as we choose? Yeah. So I hope that you are celebrating by wearing some maroon. I'm not, to be fair, but in some respects, I'm always wearing maroon. I got that M over S tattoo on my left hand with thunder and lightning in the background, but no maroon shirt for me today. What's interesting is I put a maroon shirt back to put on this Bullet Boys t-shirt. That's what I did. Yeah, so I'm just, you know, full transparency here on the yard for you. It is Friday. I hope it's a payday for you, for your weekly and biweekly wage earners. Perhaps it is. Get out and go have some fun this weekend. And College World Series final this weekend. We'll talk about it a little bit later. World Cup is going on. As you guys, for those of you that are so inclined, I am. I'm not watching it right now. I had it on earlier. Last I checked, U.S. was up 1-0 thanks to an on goal against Australia. A lot of pressure. A lot of pressure throughout the day from the red, white, and blue. Now I look, United States now up 2-0. 2-0 on Australia. You got to love that. I do. It was Cameron Burgess with the on goal for Australia in the 11th minute. And then Alex Freeman at the 43rd minute of the game makes it 2-0. The live win probability, according to the analytics, suggests that it'll be 97.5% in favor of the United States. So hopefully we can close this thing out in group stage D play, right? It's it's interesting too, just looking at this. The U.S. men's national team has so far 7 shots on goal just before the intermission, 2 of those on target, but they've possessed the ball 70% of play, 313 passes. It's ridiculous. Like a goal the other day I saw at 25, 26 passes. And that's one of the things that really hurt us with U.S. international soccer for years is we just kind of had a kickball mentality. We had to learn to play possession. And that's one of the things that you have seen a lot of changes with over the last generation. You know, youth soccer helps. That's where it has to start. It's got to start with youth soccer. But we've got a lot of very talented players. Of course, United States playing without Christian Pulisic today and still up 2-0. And so hopefully that proves to be a result that we can live with. But in the event that the U.S. wins this game, we'll win the group. We've already got 2 wins. And so, you know, we'll be in good shape. We will be. That's with Australia, Turkey, and Paraguay in our grouping. So I guess they're counting this game because we've only played 2 games, counting this one. I think that's right. I think it's right. Who knows what you look at these days? I don't remember other than the opening game against Paraguay. So I guess we still got to play Turkey. So, but with a win here, we ought to be in great shape to advance to the knockout stage. So there we go. There we go. Turkey and Paraguay play tonight, if you're so inclined to watch that. And Mexico, El Trey. I'm not, it's like, guys, I'll be honest with you, I don't dislike the Mexican national team as much as I dislike Ole Miss, but it's close. I mean, it really is. I used to be a guy that, like, I would set the clock to get up to watch the U.S. men's national team play. It didn't matter if it was an international friendly. It didn't matter if it was an exhibition. I always watched. And as I've gotten older, I haven't been quite as good a fan. But I think I shared with you guys before. If not, I'll do it again. You know, my son, Ani, has a very unique name. The first name that he was supposed to be, the name that I went to my lovely wife and said, I want to name, if he is a boy, I want to name him Kobe. C-O-B-I. Kobe. After Kobe Jones, who played on the U.S. men's national team back in 94, I guess it was. Yeah, 94. And Kobe was my favorite player on that team. And so that's what I wanted to do. I wasn't sure what the middle name was going to be, but I thought Kobe would be great because I wanted him to play soccer. And he did, and he was great under the name Ani. But one day, Dana comes to me and she goes, I don't want to name him Kobe if it's a boy. I'm like, why? She goes, well, there's this new basketball player named Kobe Bryant. And what if he ends up being great? And then our son's name would be misspelled his entire life. People would always just assume it's Kobe after this Kobe Bryant kid. Of course, back then, we didn't know what the Black Mamba would turn out to be. But great forethought by the bride there. Even though there's a part of me sometimes, too, I wish we had named him Kobe. But anyway, Ani is a great name. Again, I wanted something different. We got something different. If you're looking for something different, Bulldog Burger Company is for you. The consistency there, the diversity in the menu, the quality service, man, the atmosphere. There's a lot of places you go these days and you put your feet under their table and you're just not sure about it, right? You can go eat with confidence at Bulldog Burger Company because they're going to take care of you. Get the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. Pick out a new favorite. Try something new. Stick with what works. That's making a difference to me because you can't go wrong at Bulldog Burger Company. If you're a newbie, just pick the Bulldog. You'll be glad you did that. It's a great foundational burger. Like, if that's the only burger you eat the rest of your Bulldog Burger Company dining experiences, you will have lived life and lived it more abundantly. But if you want to branch out a little bit, walk on the wild side some, try some other things. Yeah, the Smash Burgers are a smash hit with me these days. They're brand new to the menu. And maybe if you want to change up that appetizer, you know, maybe if your beauty care regimen's in a great position, maybe go with those chili cheese fries. I like to get them with jalapenos because I like a little kick. I do. You know, you may be a little bit different. That's okay. We love you just the same. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Star Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet, M-E-A-T. All right, our top story in Mississippi State sports. Mississippi State has picked up its quarterback for the 2027 class, and it took a little bit of interesting developments to get this thing done. Now, if you are a subscriber to jeanspage.com, you weren't surprised because weeks ago, I shared with you all that there was a possibility that he may reclass. It's kind of part of the deal, right? It's our responsibility to do what we can to keep you apprised of what's happening. And that's what we tried to do. But it's interesting, you know, just as I went through all this, you know, we talked about all the Riverdale players that are coming in from Murfreesboro, Tennessee, which we'll have to go watch them play. Three commitments up there. Excited about going to see those guys. But Gavin Hampton, if you have not looked into this story, like his mother graduated from Mississippi State. And I'm not going to go dig up the year, right? Maybe you know her, but I'm not going to go dig it up, right? Because I don't want you guys doing the math or anything like that. But he is taking an official visit to Mississippi State this weekend. A ton of offers. And you got to think, he was a 2028 quarterback prospect until just a couple days ago. And he elects to reclass. It's been in the wind for a while. And he reclasses. He's going to be your Mississippi State quarterback for the class of 2027. Bulldogs beat out Arizona State, Cincinnati, Colorado, Illinois, Iowa State, Louisville, Maryland, Nebraska, North Carolina, Arkansas State, Southern Miss, Jacksonville State, Miami of Ohio, Middle Tennessee State, Toledo, Western Kentucky, Cornell, Dartmouth, Eastern Kentucky, Jackson State, Nicholls State, Tennessee State, among others. So a lengthy offer list, and as you heard, you know, a handful of Power Four offers. And if you look, and that's one of the things you look at too, is like, you know, the quality of play, right? You look at teams that, you know, get guys that are athletic, that maybe not true dual threat quarterbacks. And really, that's kind of where his Power Four offers came from. A guy that is maybe not a plus runner, but he's got good mobility and he can keep defenses honest. Very, very, very good get for Mississippi State. And, you know, you want to get your quarterback in the boat in the spring. So this is a little bit later than what Jeff Lebby's done historically at Mississippi State. But I don't know if we could have done better, to be honest with you. I don't think it's a great quarterback class in the South for 2027, which makes this development even better for Mississippi State. Now, one of the things I would say to somebody else asked me, well, you know, he knows he's coming in, right, with, you know, Camario. Well, so here's how the math works there, right? Camario played last year, and many of you, of course, you know, got out there and had diarrhea of the keyboard on the internet about, quote, burning his redshirt year. But Gavin, this year, will be a senior in high school. So Camario will be a sophomore in college. So when Gavin gets here in January, I guess it is, even if it's not, it's the spring, he is going to redshirt in 2027 when Camario is a junior. Even if Camario returns for his senior year, then Gavin would be a redshirt freshman and then have 3 years to compete for the starting job here. And, of course, you got Brody right from last year. So you're going to have some depth. You got a couple of transfer quarterbacks, too, to kind of give you some experience, some stopgap guys between Brody and Camario. But the math works out really well for Gavin, right? He'll, again, have a chance to go chase a state championship this year, redshirt next year, and then maybe understudy as a second or third team quarterback, probably a third team quarterback as a redshirt freshman. And then as Camario leaves, then you get a chance to compete. Now, we don't know what this 5-for-5 is going to do, if that's going to pass right now or later, or you know, if it works out for Gavin, it's even better, right? I don't think Camario Taylor ends up playing 5 years of college football. That's just my feeling, you know, no matter what they decide to do. But nevertheless, great development for the Bulldogs. And, you know, we got to get Gavin looked at again. He was a 90 247 Sports 4-star before he reclassed. And so that they've reclassed him, but we got to get him reevaluated. And we'll get out there and get some fresh film of him later this year. We'll probably head to Murfreesboro or somewhere about when Riverdale is playing the same weekend we go to South Carolina. So we'll make that trip, and we'll incorporate the high school recruiting trip, and that'll give us a chance, too, to kind of have a chance to see three Bulldog commitments play. You know, Dre Ote, of course, was also a guy that reclassed. He was supposed to be a 2027. They were able to get him graduated early, and so he's already enrolled at Mississippi State. So he foregoes his senior season in high school and is now going to be a true freshman at Mississippi State this year. So Gavin's going to officially visit state this weekend. And so let's spend a little time kind of talking about kind of how the visit list, there were some adjustments, right? There was. So as of now, we have 16 official visitors. And so the first two weekends combined, we had 18. So as it stands with the summer visits, it'll be right at 34. Mitchell Turner, 247 Sports 4-star defensive tackle from Louisville, Mississippi. Outstanding player. There were some people that thought maybe he wouldn't take the visit. I'm told that that really was never in jeopardy. It does appear to be an Alabama and a Mississippi State battle. Alabama's not really having a great class this year, but some of that is by design. They're going to have a smaller high school class. We'll see what that means long-term for them. But Mitchell's coming in, you know, and I feel like State's trailing Bama going into the weekend. A lot can happen. State's getting the final visit before the season starts. We'll see how things progress. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. And for some, summer is their favorite season of the year. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, adventure becomes a focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough. It could be overwhelming. Then they start counting down the minutes until the kids are back in school. And you feel like you're wasting all these days of beautiful sunshine. We plan to get out and have some fun as a family too, but we plan to thrive and not just survive. Therapy can help people better understand their needs and feel more confident setting boundaries and create a version of summer that actually feels good. BetterHelp has over 30,000 therapists. It is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct, and they are fully licensed in the United States. The reality of it is you need to learn how to say no. You don't have to say yes to everything. Take advantage of BetterHelp and take charge of your summer. You don't have to say yes. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off BetterHelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P.com. Mississippi State commitment, Christian Alexander. Also going to be in town this weekend. It was so important to get him committed. We talked about, you know, the big three running backs this year. And, you know, State's been able to get one of those three. You had to get one of the three. And we have. And I think Christian fits. I worried a little bit about his size a little bit in the spring. And then all of a sudden we get new measurables and you think, there's no need to worry about this. You know, he has definitely committed himself to the weight room, done a great job. Great job kind of preparing himself. We look forward to seeing him, too. We'll get out and see him early in the year, too, kind of throw some love his way. You know, Kennedy Green, former Mississippi State commitment. And then he decommitted last summer. Around this time last summer, he decommits, and there is a lot of chatter that he may recommit this weekend. But he's not set to announce, I can't remember the exact date. I don't know why it's not on his profile. But nevertheless, final three are South Carolina, Mississippi State, and Nebraska. We believe, as of now, it's going to be Mississippi State. That's what we believe today. This is a young man with over 40 scholarship offers and, of course, making decisions between some quality programs. That would be a good win for State. Even though he's only ranked in 88, it's a really good player. Jaden Bayonne out of Alexandria, Louisiana. He is nearly a four-star. I think State's in a pretty good spot with him. Think that's the case. He's been really busy. He's taken visits to TCU, Kentucky, Oklahoma State, Syracuse, and now Mississippi State. And I feel like we're in a pretty good spot there. It may boil down to us and TCU. But I feel like we're in a pretty good spot there. And if you go watch his film, too, you can see that this is a guy that does some good things. I know you guys don't know quite as much about him, but that's a name to kind of watch. 6'4", 280 right now is a rising senior on a high school level. LaMarcus Jones, a guy that we really thought would have already committed to Mississippi State. He commits to Colorado. Then there was some chatter this week that he may not make the visit. He may make the visit. But as of now, we expect him to be here. Deshaun Dillon, wide receiver from Northwest Rankin. I have liked him from the beginning. Now, we offered him. Yobamba offered him some time ago. Well, then Yobamba leaves, goes to Utah. We bring in Coach Montgomery. So we got to get a fresh evaluation. Well, he has now passed that evaluation and is now headed to Mississippi State this weekend for an official visit. And he is a guy, too, that's got Power Four offers in basketball and Power Four in football. And a lot of people want to play both sports. And I don't know how that would work at Mississippi State if they would afford him the opportunity to do that in the spring semester. Don't know. But that's something that's got to be worked out, too. We did have a late addition, Elijah Cox, who was out of Westlake High School, a teammate of Mississippi State commitment Brandon Allen, who is well-traveled. Elijah Cox, this is a dude, almost 6'6", 235, 240 pounds, was initially expected to visit Ole Miss this weekend. He's headed to Mississippi State and said, so that's a win already, right? I mean, you know, it's one of the details, but you got to get him in the boat sooner rather than later. And just kind of looking at the schools that, you know, that he visited throughout the process, it was Clemson way back in May, and then Purdue, and now Mississippi State. That's what we have on record. There may have been another one in there somewhere. But that's a significant development, even though, you know, he is a high three-star player. But if you go watch his film, I think we would agree that his offer sheet and his film maybe are not necessarily indicative of his ranking. I think his ranking is a little bit low. Bulldog commitment, Trey Collins, former Ole Miss commitment, Trey Collins. We'll visit Mississippi State this weekend along with tight end Sutton Gutting. What a great name for a tight end. 6'5", 225, 230 pounds. Also a teammate of a handful of guys, like Hudson Fuqua, of course, already has committed to Mississippi State, and Gavin Hampton, obviously. So that's the three guys that we'll see when we go up there. We talked about Brandon Allen. You know, he's going to make his final announcement on July 4th. It always makes me a little bit nervous. You know, even if you are committed and take other visits, the fact that you want to have a press conference is not necessarily reassuring. But the fact that he's taken all these visits hasn't especially been reassuring. Rhontre Carter, you may recall that I had a story with him last year after the state championship game when Archbishop Shaw appeared to have won the game, and then a young man threw his helmet off before time expired. He was penalized, and that ended up leading to a shanked punt, and Archbishop Shaw lost on a last-second field goal. Rhontre Carter was not the young man, Gus was his name, that threw the helmet off. Rhontre Carter, though, when all these people were on social media talking about what an idiot Gus was and all this negative stuff, Rhontre went out to defend his teammate. I ended up connecting with him, interviewed him, and just said, hey, I want to amplify your message. This is my teammate. This is my guy. And he goes, you know, we wouldn't have even been in that position if it hadn't been for Gus. He's one of our best leaders. He was just excited and kind of lost his cool for a second. He's got to live with that the rest of his life. In turn, Rhontre gave me Gus's phone number. And Gus and I were able to have some correspondence, and I tried to be an encouragement to him. But that's the caliber of young man that Rhontre Carter is. You look at the film, pretty good. When you begin to look at the total package, you start thinking, this may be a guy I want in my program, right? A guy that's willing to go out there and take on the mobs and social media and say, no, that's my teammate. That's my teammate, and I'm going to defend him. That's my brother. You love that about Rhontre Carter. Devontre Brewer, out of Tupelo, I have forecasted him to be a Bulldog for some time. And then, of course, he commits to Stanford on the visit. I do think he flips to Mississippi State, if not this weekend, at some point before the season. I wouldn't be surprised if he did it this weekend. But I think that he is a young man that will ultimately suit up for Mississippi State. He grew up a Bulldog fan, just about an hour away from home. It makes a lot of sense. And listen, that Stanford education is outstanding, but so is that one at Mississippi State. Javarius Griffin, again, still, you know, Duke is still on him a little bit. We hope that we'll get him in this weekend and we can just kind of get everything resolved. But I feel like he's going to stick. But it'd be nice just to kind of get through this and then get through the season without having to worry about that. He's already taken his OV to Duke, and so it's not like they can bring him back in season, so he'd have to go at his own expense. And so I think that favors the Bulldogs. But that's how we feel going into the weekend. We already discussed Gavin Hampton. Caleb Unger, and it's interesting too, he has been true maroon throughout the process, but he is still getting flirted with a little bit by other schools. Now, granted, this thing doesn't end until December, so we'll let it play out. But, you know, Caleb is a guy too that because of the fact he doesn't have a lot of positional flex. He's got to be a center. And so that's one of those things that comes in when you start negotiating rev share and NIL and that sort of stuff. You have to consider that. You have to have a center. You got to have a quality center. And he's a guy, too, that Phil Oldholt has kind of identified it as a guy and has communicated to Caleb throughout the process that he believes that he can kind of be an anchor of this offensive line. So we'll see how things kind of play out. And then Zylon Wesley, a commitment, one of the state's more recent commitments, out of Edna Carr High School, 6'4", 275 pounds. And so, again, we go into this thing, you know, with 16 names coming to town, but you can count them out. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So 8 of the 16 are already committed to Mississippi State. When we do our Sunday calls, we're going to start, of course, with the undeclared players or the ones committed to other schools like LaMarcus Jones or Devontre Brewer. And then we'll get to the commitments, even if it gets us into next week. You know, we'll catch up with everybody. Not as much going on once because prospect camps are over. We had prospect camp on yesterday and saw some good players, you know, some really good ones, especially on the defensive line. And it was a 2027 kid named Arsenio. Yeah, that's right. Not Arsenio. It's Asensio. That is a Jag backer. It could be a guy. You can read more about him over at Gene's page. But yeah, just looking through this, you know, you've got some priority targets on campus the same weekend. You got a bunch of commitments. You got a lot of guys that can kind of aid in the opportunity to recruit these guys. I think if State pushes Rontre Carter, I think he gets in the boat. I think if State pushes Devontre Brewer, again, I ultimately think we're going to get him anyway. We'll see what happens with LaMarcus. I think if State pushes Deshaun Dillon, then get him too. I think there is a chance here that State could possibly sweep all of this, with maybe the exception of Mitchell Turner, within the next few weeks. And we'll see what happens with LaMarcus Jones. But I would not be the least bit surprised if 14 of the 16 visitors this weekend end up being committed to Mississippi State before they begin their senior seasons. That'd be a pretty good batting average. Now, I want to bat 1,000. I'm greedy. But, again, I think it helps to bring in some priority guys when you've got a ton of guys out there that are already championing your program. They've already bought the T-shirt. Mom and dad's already been given a cowbell, you know, all that kind of stuff. So you kind of work your way through this, and you begin to realize, too, you know, the bulk of this class is going to be, you know, the hay's going to be in the barn before we even start fall camp or preseason camp, whatever we're calling it these days. But it's interesting with these June visits how many of them stick. But by and large, what we're learning is a lot of them do stick. You know, and State currently with, you know, 15 commitments now. And so if we start talking about adding commitments this weekend, maybe you get about 6. Does that sound right? Could it be as many as 6? And let's just kind of count that, just the probabilities and the possibilities, right? I don't think Mitchell Turner commits this weekend. Yeah, I would be thrilled if he does, but I don't expect it. I think Kennedy Green, I think that's a possibility. Jaden Bione, I think that's a possibility. LaMarcus Jones, I will be surprised if he does anything this weekend. I think he probably stretches out a little bit. If State pushes Deshaun Dillon, I think they get him. We'll see on Elijah Cox. The fact that he canceled a visit to take the visit, I think, is important. And then there's Rontre Carter, and this is a guy, too, that has been very serious about State from the beginning. And then you flip Devontre Brewer. So, yeah, you could definitely see 6 new commitments this weekend. You could, depending on what State wants to do and what some of these young guys want to do. And again, you got 8 commitments and then 8 guys that are either undeclared or committed to other programs. So could be a situation where we, you know, we see this thing really kind of take its true form this weekend. You know, and people always say, well, Steve, how do you feel about the class? Well, you know, I feel okay. I feel good about some spots. I'm happy to get the quarterback in, but I feel great about the running back room. I do. I feel a whole lot better when we, you know, get a few more offensive linemen, defensive linemen in the boat. I think the DB class is going to end up being really good. And, you know, we'll see what happens on the wide receiver side of things. But, yeah, I mean, again, as it sits right now, I feel okay, right? You know, you kind of break this thing down. You know, you've got 15 commitments. One of them is a true quarterback. Of course, you got Nash, too. You know, Nash Morgan, of course, high school quarterback. Not exactly sure what he's going to play, probably safety. You got another athlete in Yoshon Hudson that is expected to be a running back. But he's just a football player. You figured out. But you only got one receiver right now, 2 offensive linemen, 1 backer, and no defensive lineman, right? And so that's where we've got to kind of fortify things in the trenches, I think, to really allow this class to take shape and to really form a full opinion about it. There are, again, there's some pockets here I like, but, you know, classes are really only judged by what they look like on signing day, and then what they look like on reporting day, and then what they look like on senior day, right? Senior day of college. You know, you project as best you can, but you got some needs you got to fill, right? We all know this, and we're not there yet, and that's why we're still hosting visitors, because that's the process. You know, we're getting the last visit with some guys that are very instrumental to the success of this class, and so hopefully a little positive peer pressure will be great, and there'll be a lot of people that are kind of celebrating. You know, the parents will kind of congregate and kind of talk among themselves, and that always helps too. It always helps when the families all have a chance to kind of get together and spend time together, because you got some families out there that are also going to kind of carry the big maroon torch too. It's always important. You know, you want everybody to be bought in, and that's really the case for, I think, where Jeff Lebby does a really good job, is recruiting the family, recruiting the coach, recruiting the player, and kind of everybody around him. That's one thing you hear a lot, is about how much people like our staff, right? And relationships still matter in recruiting. Now, come December, you know, everybody's going to go out and hire an agent, and then those relationships are tested a little bit, because everybody has an agent that wants to have more of a financial commitment, you know, when it comes to rev share and NIL. And it's so crazy to think that's where we are, but it is. That's where we are. But that's your weekend preview. And again, we expect multiple commitments this weekend. I would say I would probably put the over-under at 4. But I think it could climb as high as 6 if State pushes a couple of guys that are already leaning to State. But those guys, maybe if you know you can get them, maybe you slow play them a little bit into the season. Maybe. Maybe you just want to see a little more tape. But I would set the over-under at 4. I think that's the case. I don't think you get 8, right? Not this weekend. Wouldn't it be great if we did? But I would say it could climb as high as 6. But I would say over-under 4 for those of you that are keeping up. All right, time for today's top 10 list, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair Chandler is a mortgage professional. Save his number in your phone as mortgage guy, 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. Blair is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. Yeah. Get his 25 years of expertise and know-how working for you. You'd be glad you did. To give you an opportunity to get to the closing table when perhaps so many others have failed you in the past, or maybe you've never tried before. It's a life hack they don't tell you about. Get that pre-qualification letter. That way your real estate agent will know what your financing is approved up to. It will get them working overtime for you. They will be thrilled to have that bit of information, right? The sooner you have that, the sooner you can select the home, make an offer, and next thing you know, you're planting some roots somewhere. Maybe you've been turned down in the past. Maybe it's because you weren't ready. Maybe it's because you had the wrong loan originator. If you're not ready, Blair can get you on a path to get ready, to make the dream of home ownership come true for you. So whether it's your first home, your next home, your retirement home, or perhaps that game day condo you so coveted, Blair Chandler can help you get going, right? Hit him up today at closewithblair.com. All right, we complete our Father's Day trifecta today. We started the week with rock, we went with country, and now we're going to go with some rap and R&B. Now, I'll tell you, there are some really good rap songs out there that didn't really fit our motif. And there's a couple that are maybe on the edgier side that did, that we elected to use, but it's interesting. Right? I mean, it's just an interesting dynamic, right? The relationship that we have with our fathers. And I thought about this last night. You know, about how fortunate I have been to have some great men to parent what fatherhood and husbandhood and leadership were. I mean, I've been very blessed in that respect. And my mom and dad divorced when I was 15 months old, so I lived with my grandparents. My brother and I, my mom, lived with my grandparents until 1980, and my mom got remarried, and I've had a great stepdad, had a great dad, but, you know, I was thinking about my grandfather last night, and again, when my parents divorced, I was so young, I don't remember any of that. I don't remember living as the, you know, the four-piece family unit. I just don't remember. I'm too young to remember, and my dad and I were best friends. You know, in the latter years of his life. And so I'm in no way disrespecting my father. Love my dad. But really, the first husband that I got to see really kind of pattern everything for me was my grandfather, Reverend Warren Jefferson Selman. a name fit for the presidency. And he was a man of God, and preached for many years in small churches around South Mississippi, but also worked as a carpenter and put some time in at Ingalls Shipyard whenever he needed to, whenever we needed some money, you know. Did what he had to do to support the family, and allowed his daughter to move back home with her two boys. And the thing that I remember so much is, number one, how hard he worked, how hard he prayed, but man, how much he loved my grandmother. And he absolutely loved my grandmother. He had that blue Chevrolet pickup truck. He'd wear his flannel shirts and his old painted cap and go paint houses and whatever needed to be done to keep the family fed. But when he came home and he got that shower and got on his lounging clothes, you know, he was a different person. And the first thing he did when he walked in the house is he went up and kissed my grandmother. The last thing he did when he left the house is go up and kiss my grandmother. And guys, I do the same thing. I do the same thing. And I learned it by watching him at a very young age. And as my grandmother, who was the strongest woman I have ever known, I've shared some things about her over the years, things that she did, almost superhero in many respects. And I guess a lot of people feel that way about their grandmother. Your grandma always can make everything feel all right, right? And there have been times in my life when things were not going as I wanted them to, and I could call her, and she would always say, "Baby, it's going to be okay." And just hearing that made it feel a little more okay. Just that assurance that, you know what, just hang in there. It's going to be okay. It mattered. It mattered to me. And a lot of times I would call her just so she would tell me that. And just, I'm a person that heals by talking anyway. But the thing that I remember too is when my grandmother got Alzheimer's, and my grandfather waited on her hand and foot every day until she required greater care than he could provide. And so they had to put her in a nursing home. And he went out there just about every day, and sometimes would spend hours. And a lot of times she had no idea who he was. Some days she did, some days she didn't. But he would sit there on that couch and tend to his wife, even in her diminished capacity. It was real love between the two of them. And I remember the day that we had her funeral, watching him walk up to her casket for the final time and seeing this incredibly strong man, this man of God, this man that had spent his entire life caring for his family and demonstrating what it meant to be a husband and a father. And as he approached to view her for the last time, I thought he was going to crawl up in the casket with her. It was so difficult to watch. So incredibly difficult. Because she was all he'd known. They got engaged when she was 16, and I think he was 18, right? It's a different day and time back then. And it's so funny. They had gone out on a date, and it was raining. And it was like one of those fall nights, you know, where the windows fog up as you're sitting in the driveway or whatever, you know. And he didn't even have the stones to ask her. So he just took his finger and he wrote in the fog on the window, "Will you marry me?" And she told that story so lovingly all those years. And to think in many respects, that, you know, they kind of grew up married. And so I share that with you because my grandfather, never a day in his life, as long as I knew him, ever had a cross word for my grandmother. Not in front of us. And I remember my Aunt Kathy asking Mama Selman one day. She said, "Well, Mama, y'all never fought." She goes, "Well, baby, sometimes we did. We just didn't do it in front of y'all." And she said, "Well, what would you guys do when you couldn't be agreed?" And she said, "We would just go sit on the couch, watch TV, and hold hands and just love each other through it." And that's one of those things that I think about when I've had difficult times in my life, and I've had difficult times in my marriage, and I've had difficult times as a parent. Sometimes all you can do is hold hands and love each other through it. Sometimes words just aren't enough. Sometimes you just got to let somebody know that even if we're not agreed, I still love you. I'm still hanging on to you. I may not be able to speak to you right now in terms and language you understand, but I love you. And so I'm going to hang on to that. And so there have been so many great life lessons that were shared with me by my grandparents, watching them as a young person and even growing up, and just watching how they doted on each other. And it was so interesting. Like if one of the kids ever needed anything, she would address him as Daddy. Daddy, can you do this? And if it was for her, she always addressed him, Darling. Darling, can you do this? Darling, can you turn the air conditioning down? Darling, are you hot? Yeah, it was interesting. She never called him by his name. Never. Maybe on rare occasion, you know. But it's just, I wanted to share that with you guys too, because, you know, I learned to love by watching how my grandfather loved my grandmother. All right, top 10 rap and R&B songs about dad. Number 10, Ed OG and the Bulldogs, back from 91, Be a Father to Your Child. R&B and rap has changed a lot since then. But Be a Father to Your Child, the message is still incredible. Number 9, Sade. And of course, it reads Sadie to you young bucks. But what an incredible talent, right? And she shared a song about co-parenting on her comeback album, Soldier of Love, which that song is ridiculous. Soldier of Love is phenomenal. But it's Baby Father. And it's basically about having the opportunity to still be friends as co-parents. And her daughter, her 13-year-old daughter at the time, sang backup on this track. Number 8, you know, I kind of have a strict no Lil Wayne policy. I've never, like, been a big Weezy fan. Some of you guys are, and I'm in no way being disrespectful. But I began to become more of a fan of Lil Wayne when I got to know more of his story, right? Away from the music. Like, he is so incredibly intelligent. And, like, I think in some respects that's masked by some of the imagery, you know, in the music. But when you see him sit down and talk to people, he's a lot smarter, I think, than he portrays himself at times in music. He's had an incredible story. And you can watch so many videos of interviews with him where he speaks up so much about his own family. And anyway, he wrote a track. It's a fun song. There's nothing serious about this one, but it's Stunt Like My Daddy at number 8. Number 7, going back a few years, it's the Shy Lights, Let Me Be the Man My Daddy Was. Many of you have probably never heard that song. It's a happy song. It is. Number 6, this one not so much, but it is a beautiful song. The strings in this, it'll make you emotional. Like if you really just kind of sit with the right frame of mind and you listen to this song, you can hear the pain in DMX's voice. It's a letter to my son from DMX. And Usher is on this too. But man, the arrangement, like after kind of the spoken word part is over, is beautiful. It'll just bathe upon your emotions, and I think you'll have a lot of joy with that one, honestly. Number 5, it's Beyonce, who, the better version of Destiny's Child, the best version, the most talented of the group. She wrote a song of appreciation about her dad that had always been there for her through it all, and it's just simply entitled Daddy. Number 4, James Brown, as the thunder rolls, is Papa Don't Take No Mess, right? And a lot of that was, it was, in many respects, it was kind of dated for an era in American history, you know, about how hard dad had to work and all the challenges daddy had to put up with, right? But he just didn't put up with any nonsense, right? in some respects, a lot's changed. And in some respects, there's so much that's remained the same. Number three, and I absolutely love this song, and this may surprise you a little bit. My kids, big J. Cole fans. And there's a great song, and if you've never heard it, I encourage you to listen to. I think this is one of those songs, too, that may stir up a little emotion in you, too. But it's called Dear Dad, I Finally Understand. And there were so many things, like, I don't think you can really be a good kid until you've been a parent, right? Because once you become a parent yourself, you see your parents more in a human eye. You're like, I get it. You know, I get it. You make all these sacrifices for me. And I remember one of my children, I won't say which one, but when they kind of got on their own, we had a conversation one day and they said, you know, Daddy, you always made it look so simple and it's just not simple. What am I doing wrong? I'm like, it's not simple. It's just that children shouldn't be aware of adult issues. You know, you guys never understood, you know, the times when things would get tough, we'd have an unexpected expense, and I'd have to ask your grandparents for a little bit of money just to make sure that you guys didn't do without. You never knew how many times the day before payday I would go to the ATM to buy lunch for myself and hold my breath, hoping my debit card didn't get declined. You never knew those things, right? Because we had a family of six. And then when you get older, you begin to understand what a big deal it is to take everybody out to eat, how expensive that can be, and how much fun it is. And that's really what you're paying for, that and a little bit of convenience, right? But there are so many things that your parents do for you that you can't fully appreciate until you have to do them for your own children. And, you know, I see so much of this today, this sense of entitlement. And I got to thinking about this last night. You know, it was an introspective night, I guess you could say. You know, why did we become so entitled? And I got a few thoughts and theories on that. Well, one of the things that I think about is you think about music, right? Unless you had a record player or you had your favorite records, more times than not, you just listened to terrestrial radio and then they decided what you would hear. You just had the radio on and they would decide what they're going to play. Yeah, nowadays you can subscribe to iTunes and you can listen to just about any song in recorded history. So you can kind of get what you want when you want it. You know, when I was a kid, we had four TV stations. We had ABC, CBS, NBC, and then the Mississippi Public Broadcast System. So you didn't have as many options. And you typically only had one TV. So there was a lot of compromise. You know, nowadays, everybody's got a TV in every room. You got Netflix, Hulu, Paramount Plus, all that good stuff. And you can watch almost any movie in recorded history. It may not be streaming for free or a part of your package and platform, but you can typically go find it. Now, used to, you know, we'd go to TGNY or Gibson's, and you bought whatever they had on the shelf. Nowadays, you can go to Amazon, and you can get just about anything manufactured in the United States delivered to your door tomorrow. And so I think about those things, how incredibly convenient and how much I enjoy all of those things. But I think in some respects, too, there has been a sense of entitlement that has kind of come with it. Because everything is available to us with a click. We never had to request a song and hope that the DJ played it within the next hour. And then when they did, like, you young bucks will never understand. Like, you'd call up WRNO. Or you'd call up SO100 or Z-Rock in Jackson at 106.7. You'd say, dude, can you play this song? And then eventually they would play it. And dude, like, you would just grab the radio and just turn it up because your song was playing. And it was such a big deal. It just felt like such an honor. Oh, they played my request, right? It was a different time. But I think it taught us some life skills that maybe some young people today don't have. And that's not me being critical. It's just an observation. Number two, beautiful song. And I remember when this thing came out, everybody's like, holy smokes. Luther Vandross' Dance with My Father. And man, it seemed like it was everywhere. after that, everywhere. It was covered by a lot of different artists, and it's a beautiful song. It's, you know, Luke Devandros, is just, you talk about a guy that's just silky smooth. It's him. Now, number one, though, and I remember thinking about my oldest son. I remember when this song was popular and when it dropped and how much he loved it, because it reminded him of us, because not only were we father and son, he was my best buddy. And he still is. But it's just the two of us from Will Smith. And and in many respects, I share with people, when it came out, I said, dude, it's almost like a rap version of Simple Man from Lynyrd Skynyrd. It's all this great life advice for young men as they begin to grow up. Like the whole thing, you know, about respect women, right? And be easy on the swears. And that when somebody wrongs you, let God deal with the things they do. Because hate in your heart will consume you too. So true, right? It's almost biblical, right? The whole thing through. And I love that song. And sometimes when I'm missing my oldest son and I can't get a hold of him for a while, you know, maybe he's working or whatever, I put that song on, and it takes me back to a time that we used to travel and go see the Bulldogs play, or he would go with me to high school games and things like that. And, hey, Dad, put that song on. And I knew he wanted to hear it because of the relationship that I had with him. And I hope the same lessons that my grandfather passed down to me and my dad and my stepdad, the things that I learned from them, I hope that I have demonstrated those and mirrored those and patterned those for my sons to know how to treat their wives, and for my girls to know how their husbands should treat them. And that's the goal, right? And I remember having a conversation with Dana's mom years ago, and she was talking about how much I doted on the girls and how much I did for Dana. And she said, the one thing that I know for sure, you and Dana have shown your children what it is to be married, and what a great thing for your daughters to see how their dad loves their mother. And so they're going to know what that looks like. So when they're married, if somebody didn't love them the way you love their mama, they're going to know, this isn't the one I should marry. It's a beautiful thing. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy Samanti, my friend, on X at Dogmatic67, DawgMatic67. You can find our great list on Spotify under that same handle. And so to all of you dads out there, happy Father's Day. And for all you kids out there, I hope you get a chance to talk to your dad, send your dad a card or whatever. And if you're estranged from your dad, I'm sorry that's the case. If there are some things you can forgive, I would encourage you to do so. Because I can promise you, he wants to hear from you too. And no matter what you tell yourself or try to justify, it's the only dad you're ever going to have, right? And I understand there are some things that happen to people that can't be forgiven. And you need to protect yourself at all times. But the reality of it is that we are only granted a short time here on earth. Life is short, death is certain. And to live with bitter resentment is just something, that's just too expensive a life to lead. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Man, we love Campus Bookmart. Why? Well, they got the things we want. When it's gift buying time in your life, don't overthink it. Don't try to invent a better mousetrap. You got Bulldogs in your family, and I suspect you do. Just get them Mississippi State merch. Whether it be apparel, decorative items for the home, the office, the RV, the game day condo. You can find everything you need to rep the brand at Campus Bookmart. Stop by and see their smiling faces the next time you're in Starkville. You'll be glad you did. I get a complimentary hug when I buy stuff there. I don't think it's just me, but maybe it is. Maybe it is. Maybe it's worth a chance, right? If you can't make it to town, visit them on the World Wide Web, courtesy of Al Gore's internet at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays, and that is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. You got vacation time coming up. Let's get some new Mississippi State merch. Go out there and just kind of rep the Bulldogs where you go. Let other Bulldogs know when you're out at Disney World or in the Redneck Riviera that you're a friend, right? Miss Kathy Brown does a great job outfitting that operation with the latest in Mississippi State wares. You owe it to yourself to get the best selection at the best price. when it comes to Mississippi State merchandise, you can do that at Campus Bookmart. All right. They have moved the game one of the College World Series up due to weather. Expected weather in the forecast. And, of course, the best two of three series begins 2 p.m. Central on Saturday. And, yeah, we're excited about it. I mean, hey, we got an SEC team playing. I like the streak. I know some of you are like, oh, always, you know, root against the SEC. Well, here's the thing. We don't really have a ton of recruiting battles with Oklahoma, so it's one of the safer wins, right? But also, too, I think you benefit a little bit in recruiting when you can talk about how you've had so many SEC teams in a row win the College World Series. And it's been forever since the ACC won a championship. So I know a lot of their schools, maybe not NC State, maybe not Duke, but I suspect everybody else in the ACC is like, dude, we've got to find a way to wrestle control of college baseball away from the Southeastern Conference. So I suspect it'll be a great series. I hope it is. And just to kind of get you guys a little bit ready here, just because I know that some of you are fans of college baseball. But Oklahoma currently 41-22. You may recall 14-16 in the Southeastern Conference. They finished 11th. They were the 11th seed going to Hoover. Right? And so you felt like they had done enough late to make the tournament. And they did, obviously. They wouldn't still be playing. But you look up and you're like, well, you know, Steve, I don't know how this Oklahoma team did it. Well, it's got hot right early, right? Guys, they went 0-1 in Hoover. They got beat by OSU 6-2. But, man, since that time, they have pretty much been on fire. They've won 8 straight. And I think the number I saw earlier, in 10 NCAA tournament games, they've hit 26 home runs. That's pretty impressive. And they've been, you know, they found the bats as the weather has kind of heated up, which maybe says a little bit about playing early season baseball in Oklahoma. But, you know, just kind of going back to the Atlanta Regional, again, you just kind of dump Oklahoma in there, you know, against the number 2 national seed. You think, well, okay, right? And again, that's got to just stick in the craw of the ACC champion, right? That you get an SEC team that finished 11th and they come to your place and they win it. But the Sooners knocked off the Citadel 8-3. Then they lose Georgia Tech. So they're in a loser's bracket game. Well, they come back. It's like all of a sudden they just find it. They beat the Citadel 15-5, then beat Georgia Tech 15-8 to force a winner-take-all game. And they win it 8-7 in the 10th. They had the walk-off home run to win it. What a wild game that was. So you've eliminated the ACC regular season champion from the NCAA tournament. Then you got to go play the Big 12 champion in Lawrence, Kansas, in the Kansas Jayhawks, and they absolutely demolished them. 8-1 and 13-2. So you, I don't know what's more impressive, scoring 21 runs or just only allowing 3 in a super regional. Impressive. Well, then they get Alabama 9-0. They beat Georgia 4-3, and then Georgia 11-4. And so, again, this is a team that's been red hot on really both sides of the plate. You know, I guess the closest game they had in Omaha was that 4-3 game against Georgia when Georgia hit 3 solo home runs. And again, it's interesting that Oklahoma decided to go to manual signals. But so now you've eliminated the ACC champion, the Big 12 champion, and the SEC champion. You talk about a lot of skins on the wall and what's proven to be a good year of college baseball. And you got to wonder a little bit too, like, goodness, what if they'd been playing UCLA this weekend, right? Would they get those guys too in the Big Ten? Man, the Sooners have been giant killers. It's incredibly important. When you go back, you just go back and think about this for a second. You've knocked off the number 2 national seed. You've knocked off the number 7 national seed. And then you knock off the number 3 national seed. Now you're going to take on with the number 4 national seed. It's pretty impressive. It is. And, you know, I know a lot of you were like me. I didn't get a chance to watch a lot of Oklahoma baseball this year. And you always expect them to be good on the pitching side. But they've had a young man that has kind of caught fire here down the stretch and has become a little bit of a national name, and that's Cord Rager. He's 6-3. 15 starts this year, ERA of 4.69. And he's given up a ton of home runs. Leads the team with 16 jacks against. Batting average against is .211. But what's so interesting, you know, a lot of these younger guys all of a sudden find some confidence. He is a 6'6", 237-pound left-hander from Maypearl, Texas. But all of a sudden, down the stretch, he has convinced himself that he can compete at a high level against big-time teams. And that's what's so interesting about all of this. You know, he has pitched three times in the postseason. Guys, he was 3-3 entering the NCAA tournament. And he has stacked up three straight wins over the Citadel, Kansas, and Alabama. And the game against the Citadel wasn't exactly the easiest. He gave up three runs on seven hits and goes just six innings, but those just 82 pitches. He has not passed the 100-pitch threshold all year. He's had a couple times he's gone 93. So fairly efficient, but he went seven innings, allowing three hits against Alabama, struck out eight, didn't walk any. So he's had plenty of time to rest. He'll have had a full week by the time he takes the mound tomorrow. So pretty impressive. I think everybody would agree. And I'm pulling for Oklahoma. I've had a chance to interview Skip Johnson. He was fabulous to me. And, you know, had some friends in Mississippi that have hunted with him before. It's pretty impressive. North Carolina. We talked about them as we began to kind of forecast the tournament field. Is that they were kind of a sneaky top eight national seed that nobody was really talking about. They just kind of quietly went about their business. They do everything well. There's not one thing you look at and say they're just absolutely great at this. But there's also nothing you look at and say that's a real weakness. Pretty good at everything. Very well-rounded team. They're 53-12-1. They've won five straight. They went 22-8. Think about that. You win 22 games in a Power Four conference and you don't win the regular season championship. Well, that was the case. It's true. And, you know, just kind of working through this too. Like, they benefit a little bit too, RPI-wise, because of the fact they have some teams regionally close to them, like East Carolina. Like, they took one game from East Carolina. You talk about a split. They split a three-game series. An even split. One win, one loss, and a tie, right? And then you get Virginia Commonwealth. You know, you mercy rule those guys, but, you know, that's a decent non-conference game. They lose two out of three to Virginia, and you think, oh, well, maybe UNC's not going to have it this year, but they bounce back. They did. They sweep Cal. They get two out of three from Louisville. They beat South Carolina 9-1 in Truist. And everybody did. They go to nationally ranked Notre Dame at the time. They sweep the Irish. They get Campbell in a midweek affair. And, you know, Campbell's always been a team that very solid mid-major there on the in the Carolinas. The Fighting Camels. That's an RPI climber for you. They get two out of three from Boston College. And then they get two out of three on the road at Clemson. And that's when Clemson really kind of began to fade a little bit. People are like, well, they were in a hosting discussion. They host Georgia Tech. They get two out of three from them. Remember High Point taking two out of three from Florida? Well, they beat High Point too. Take two out of three from Duke. They get Coastal at home and get destroyed 12-2 in a midweek game. And then, you know, you get a little deeper in this thing. We'll kind of flip ahead here. But they get in the ACC tournament. They win their first two games and then get eliminated by Georgia Tech. So a little bit of a revenge there for the Yellow Jackets. They get into their own regional. They sweep the Chapel Hill regional, taking down VCU, East Carolina. And how interesting is that, that they had some regular season opponents in their regional. USC comes in, and USC wins game one. We were in Athens when all this happened. I remember I was eating pizza at Fully Loaded Pizza there in Athens, Georgia, watching this game. But 9-5 is the final on Friday in favor of USC. And then USC struggled to score the rest of the weekend. North Carolina gets them 4-0 and then 4-3. And then everybody in the state of Mississippi with a brain became a North Carolina fan because they were in the bracket with Ole Miss. Of course, they get Ole Miss 6-2. They get West Virginia 5-2. And then probably one of the more impressive wins, I think, of the tournament. Maybe when you back the Oklahoma thing down, like Oklahoma shutting down the Georgia offense is the story of this tournament. But kind of behind it, they beat North Carolina beats West Virginia 12-7 without hitting a home run. While Oklahoma has been somewhat relying on a long ball, West Virginia is a team that's been very scrappy. They do a lot of unorthodox stuff, and they're not going away either. But North Carolina just kind of doubled them to death, right? No home runs, and you put up 12 runs to eliminate the Mountaineers. And, again, I thought it was so much fun to watch all that. And so that brings us into the weekend. It's interesting, like, looking at the Oklahoma schedule, they have all three games listed. North Carolina has two. They have Saturday and Sunday. They don't have the if necessary game on Monday. Does that speak of a quiet confidence for North Carolina? Maybe. But it's going to be an interesting matchup. You know, and you know, we talk about there always seems to be one or two pitchers in the ACC that take all the headlines. Well, a couple of them are wearing Carolina blue. Jason DeCaro, outstanding pitcher. 18 appearances this year, 18 starts. He's 11-2, 2.31 ERA, 78 hits, 24 earned runs, and 93 2/3 of an innings pitched. Strikeout-to-walk ratio is not great, 93-41. So he's right there at 2-1. But he's kept the ball in the yard for the most part. I mean, he's given up just 7 home runs this year. Batting average against .231. He's more of a pitch-to-contact guy. But again, got a chance to climb above the 100 strikeout plateau. The only guy on the roster that's done that is the freshman, Caden Glauber, who has become a household name in college baseball families over the course of the last month. Most people had no clue who he was until they got to Omaha. 11-0 on the year. And that's 28 appearances and 3 starts, right? He's getting it done out of the bullpen. Also has 5 saves to his credit. So he's had a hand in 16 victories officially. 2.17 ERA, and you got to feel like this kid's probably going to be a starter next year. Maybe he wasn't quite ready this year, but, man, he has proven to be game ready when they've needed him. 58 hits and 87 innings pitched. We talk about you want to be a hit per or less. Well, that's less. At 106 strikeouts against 39 walks. A dog a hunt, man. He's allowed 8 home runs. You'd expect that, being a freshman and all, especially early on. But batting average against is .191. And he has shown an ability to throw twice on a weekend. And there's nothing left. Like, you don't, there's no next week. We're not going to save anybody for the Cape, right? You're going to get out there and you're going to get it done. You got a chance to win a national championship. And that's one of those things, too, I think that's kind of super cool about all this stuff. Is when you start thinking about, you know, what this means, like, historically. Again, it's the ACC versus the SEC. You got to love that, right? I always do. But North Carolina's never won the national championship. They've been the runner-up in 06 and 07. And, of course, you know, we played them in 07 and let that game get away from us, if you remember. You know, and a lot of people say, well, we shouldn't have been there. Well, we were. We earned the right to be there. But there's never been a North Carolina college baseball champion. That's super, you know, again, it's all great. Now, Oklahoma has won it twice, but it's been a long time. 1951 was the first one, and then 1994 was the second. Now, you guys know we were all Sooner fans in 2022, as they were the team that lost to Ole Miss. And you remember that crazy bunt play where they had the call about running inside the runner's lane? Changed the game, and ultimately the series, and Ole Miss beat them. And Oklahoma at that time, too, was one of the hottest teams in the country. It's what good skippers do. You figure out who you can trust, and then you ride those horses in the postseason, but you always need somebody to step up. to kind of help carry the weight that maybe haven't. And so, again, we're excited about it. I am, anyway. And we'll enjoy watching that. And how cool is it, too, that by and large, we don't have to hate watch this thing, right? We don't have to look at this and say, well, I don't want this team to win. Do you really care if Oklahoma wins? Right? It's not going to hurt us. And again, I think there is something to be said for continuing the SEC streak and yet another team wins it. Again, it just kind of shows how well-rounded the league is. Is it going to really upset me if North Carolina wins it? No. You know, because I think North Carolina's been so good for so long, consistently. And Scott Forbes, you know, turned down the South Carolina job to stay there. Why would you leave? You know, right? You're on the cusp of playing for an AFL championship. You kind of got things going the way you want. And so, no, it won't crush me if North Carolina wins. I think it's probably good for the game. And I have respect for a lot of these teams that have been really good at baseball for a long time that haven't won it. That was us for a long time, too. And one of the things, too, like with Georgia getting eliminated, like I don't have to live with the fact that they have two national championships and we have one. They won the first SEC championship back in 1990. The first SEC team to win the whole shoot match at Omaha. And I remember going to their place at Foley years ago and I said to myself, that's not going to be us. We went there in 22. I said, that's not going to be us. You know, 35, 34 years, somewhat after the fact, with our one NAFL championship on the wall. No, it's not going to be us. And I firmly believe that's the case. And we'll see what happens with Georgia kind of moving forward. But anyway, that's your college World Series preview. I hope you have a chance to enjoy that this weekend. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. The best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none, when you bring a large group to town, and you should. You owe it to yourself to make some memories with the people you care the most about, whether it's a college roommate reunion, sorority sisters reunion, fraternity, brothers reunion, or maybe it's just, you know, family. All of those memories can be meaningful. And you've got the venue for the perfect get-together. Just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus, so conveniently located. If it's a ballgame weekend, you can do your tailgating right there. But you know what? You can tailgate anyway, whether it's ballgame weekend or not. Maybe you got some midweek vacation time you need to use. It's a great time to do it. Yeah, stay at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Now, Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page will auto-populate. You can peruse pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guests. Full-service kitchen. You just cook right there. Great appliances, right? The wet bar, back porch area, fire pit area. Plenty of parking. We don't want you throwing a rager out there, but there's only a couple neighbors. It's out just past the Highlands. So incredibly close to campus. And you can come enjoy that, right? Make some memories with the people you love the most. You'll be glad you did. Now, when you do that Google search, some booking options are going to pop up too. Airbnb, Vrbo, whichever way you want to go, you can do that. But if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website. And use promo code BSR10. It's BSR10. Gets you 10% off your stay just by listening to this show. We stayed there, had a great time. We plan to do it again. Hope that you guys will take full advantage of this great offer to stay at the premium place to stay in the Golden Triangle, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. All right, big news from the National Football League. And I think this is a great story about redemption. Former Mississippi State Bulldog defensive tackle Jeffrey Simmons is now the highest paid defensive tackle in NFL history. Now, of course, you expect, you know, the salaries are not what they once were, but a three-year, $105.8 million extension with $100 million of guaranteed money for Jeff Simmons. Former Walter Payton Man of the Year, right? And I've seen some things on social media that are very encouraging to me. Because, like all of you, I remember that video making the rounds of Jeff as a Mississippi State signee defending his sister. And it nearly cost him his opportunity at Mississippi State. Of course, a lot of people in the Southeastern Conference were like, oh, they got to suspend him, just knowing they wanted to sign him. But I think the real lesson for young people here is no matter what you do, and no matter what you accomplish in life, there's going to be people that are always going to bring like the worst moment of your life up. But look at what Jeff Simmons has done. Look at the great that he's done with his money. He's given back to his community. He's taken care of his family. He's taken care of other people when they've had needs. Goodness, he brought Jelly Roll to Macon, Mississippi just last year. It's incredible to look at Jeff now and look at how he was perceived back then. And Dan Mullen and Scott Strickland interviewed over 40 people about Jeff Simmons before they said, you know what, we're going to stick by him because this is not consistent with his character. And he has proven in the 10 or so years that have followed that that was not indicative of his character. And so the lesson learned here, young people, is you may do something that in the eyes of society is a huge mistake. And it was, right? I mean, let's just be honest. And I understand his intentions were noble, defending his sister. I understand. I get that aspect of it. And I remember having some very heated discussions with some people on the Mississippi State beat about that. And I remember Scott Strickland at the SEC meetings going down and fielding questions from Andy Staples and Dan Wolken and so many others about why we were going to hang on to him. And a lot of people said, well, it's just because he's such a talented player. You know, that's part of the deal. Right? And so I think it's important to understand that you can live long enough to reshape how people view you rather than just a snapshot of a video of perhaps one of your less than finest moments. I think that's an important aspect in all this stuff, right? We can't change the past, but we can change what it means. And I think Jeffrey Simmons has done that. I think it's a miracle in many respects, but he and his family are owed a great deal of praise for how they've moved on from that. You know, if you sit around all the time ruminating about your problems, right? And you recall when Jeffrey Simmons was the first round draft pick of the Tennessee Titans, there were a lot of people that passed on Jeff because of that incident. And when Jeff was introduced to some of the big wigs at Tennessee, he told them that he would do everything that he could to get that program a championship, and that he would always represent them with dignity. And he has. He's made good on that promise. I could not be happier for Jeff. And yes, he comes back and spends some time with us here in Starkville. You know, shows up at the ball games. But many of you may have forgotten the video that the fine folks at Mississippi State did of Jeff's announcement when he got the call and the tears that streamed down his face. Those weren't just tears of happiness. They were tears of relief. And Jeff Simmons has had multiple opportunities to hold out of contracts, try to test the free agent market, but he hadn't done that. He's remained true to Tennessee. And you and I both know, if the rain begins to really fall here in Starkville, Jeff would be able to command a huge salary on the open market. But instead, he has remained loyal to the people that believed in him, took a chance on him, and in many respects, he has become kind of the face of that franchise. And now, of course, he's the highest paid defensive tackle of all time. There was a time where Tommy Kelly, Mississippi State alum, claimed that same distinction. And now it's Jeffrey Simmons. And I think for a stretch, so did Fletcher Cox. And we talk about DLU, and you know, it's kind of, maybe it's fallen off last couple of years, maybe. But there's still a proud legacy for this university and his football program. And Jeff Simmons, in many respects, is a big part of that. And again, I just think it's important to note that, you know, one moment should never be the representation of who we think somebody is, but oftentimes that's the case. Oftentimes that's the case. You know, forgiveness at times comes at a premium. And I don't know how Jeff has handled that aspect of it, you know, with those other folks. I don't know. But I know that he has conducted himself as a first-class individual while he's been with the Titans. And I couldn't be happier for Jeff and his family. And, you know, we talk about generational wealth and that sort of stuff. And, you know, I still go back to that, you know, 2018 Outback Bowl. We had three first-round draft picks that played in a bowl game. When this whole trend about opting out began, and Montez Sweat, Jonathan Abram, and Jeffrey Simmons all played in a game because of their love for their teammates and for Mississippi State. And we've had some others that have opted out, and there's really no right or wrong way, right? Everybody has to do what they feel is best for themselves. But Jeffrey Simmons wanted to win that ball game for you and for Mississippi State. And that is worthy of respect. It absolutely is. You know, we've got this other stuff going on, you know, the Save Sports Act, and, you know, Roger Wicker did not vote in favor of it. The measure passed the committee 19-9 vote with a couple Republicans voting against it, including Mississippi's Roger Wicker. I don't understand his motivation behind it. I know there are some people within the SEC that don't want this measure to pass, and I don't know their methodology either. But I did call Roger Wicker's office to ask for comment, and to this point they have not returned the call, and they may not. But I think that's part of the process. We need to know why things get voted on the way they did. Maybe Roger Wicker has a greater understanding of this bill than we all do. But it's interesting to me that someone in the heart of college football land would be against this. Just my feeling. And again, there may be some things about this that he wants to see changed or whatever. But I don't know what you gain from it. And I do think it's one of those things, too, where no matter how many times we call or email, it's not going to change anything. But they have tweaked it a little bit. They tried to give the Big Ten some, you know, some concessions to kind of get them on board. And I don't know what they're going to do with the SEC. And, you know, everybody's like, well, you know, we're against it. But they haven't really detailed out what they're against and how they would fix it. It's so interesting. Everybody agrees that we need change, but not at our expense, right? That's the thing you keep going back to. Yeah, we want to change it, but we want everybody else to be inconvenienced and not us, you know. And the reality of it is that we can't keep going. And as I touched on last week, or I guess last show, there are a lot of teams around the Southeastern Conference that are basically on a shoestring budget. You say, Steve, I just don't understand how that's possible. Well, you know, you went from not having to pay student athletes to having to pay them $20.5 million in a year because of the house settlement. They're trying to raise money wherever they can, you know, to ensure that they can meet the demands and to put competitive teams on the field, but also to remain in compliance with the house settlement. As we've seen, there's a lot of concern about Olympic sports. There's a lot of concern about non-revenue producing sports. And some would suggest, well, it's a free market economy. I think when it comes to measures of college athletics, though, I think it's a little different. Just because a certain student athlete excels in your favorite sport doesn't make their sacrifice and hard work more important than someone who plays a sport that maybe you're not a fan of. You know, maybe you've never been to a Mississippi State softball game, but I guarantee you, you kept up with them when they made it to Oklahoma City because you cheer for the logo, right? And we had people showing up on the message board at Jean's page saying, hey, give her whatever she wants, you know. Well, that's not prudent. That's not being a good steward of our money. But at the same time, too, there's some new accomplishments there. You know, we've gone places we've never gone before. And so, yeah, there's going to be a little expenses that go along with that. We want to maintain that trajectory. And so you begin to ask yourself, where does that money come from? You know, what do we do? How do we accommodate that? What if volleyball makes a big run next year? And then we have to do that. We got to replicate that expense again. And so it's important that we kind of understand that, you know, there are some things about all of this that maybe don't make great business sense, but they make good sense overall. When you begin to think about, you know, one of the things that I complained about for years, you know, is scholarship inequality. That, you know, football and men's and women's basketball are full scholarship sports, but just about everything else is a partial scholarship sport. And mainly, a lot of that was about baseball, right? And some could be said, you know, with hockey, right? And I felt like, hey, you ought to give the schools some discretion that they can pick and choose maybe a non-revenue producing sport or a head counter sport or an equivalency sport, and let them fully fund that of their choosing. Give them one sport on the men's and women's side. If you want to fully fund baseball and softball, you can. You want to fully fund men's and women's volleyball, you can. You want to fully, you know, fund golf, you can, right? I mean, it's all completely up to you. I think there should be that. And then what you could do is just have different levels. And I understand there's expense and all this stuff, but we've got to have some sense of law, and we've got to have an opportunity, because there's so much fan fatigue. So much. You know, one of the provisions in the bill was you get the one-time transfer and then you have to sit. Like, you transfer multiple times, you got to sit the second time. I don't know that there's a lot of people that would really root against that, but there are some. There's some would say, hey, a college student, it's the regular college student, can move around as much as they want. The issue with that is that they're not, more times than not on a scholarship, full scholarship, nor are they in a situation where they're receiving, sharing in the revenue of a university. It's a much different dynamic. And I think that's an important aspect of this. There is a distinction. They're not just regular college students. And no matter how many times that we articulate that false point, doesn't make it any more true. When a university is invested in a player, there has to be a different level of scrutiny with all this stuff. There just has to be. And you're welcome to disagree. I don't have the corner to market on all good ideas. That's for sure. But we're never going to get a perfect bill. We're never going to get a perfect framework. But the reality of it is we got to get something done. And at the very least, at least we have a bipartisan effort to save college sports. And there were so many people before that said that was impossible, that we'd never, ever, ever have the opportunity to have Republicans and Democrats both agree. But I think the fact that the Hatfields and McCoys and cats and dogs can have a peace accord to try to get this done, I think speaks to how serious the problems are with college athletics. That people are like, even opposite sides of the aisle are like, we got to do something. And so you come up with some compromises and you try to get things done. And so at some point, it'll come up for a bill. You know, the SCORE Act never did. So we learn from that, we revise and put some new things together. But there has to be some protection. There has to be some semblance of rules. And I'm eager to kind of see how that impacts stuff. And I can tell you, I've got people around the league that just, they will just flat out tell you, Steve, there just aren't hardly any rules that are being enforced now. And so you got teams out there ramrodding deals together outside of the NIL Go program that have yet to be held accountable. You got some other people too that proposed deals to NIL Go knowing that it didn't make the framework, knowing that it did not qualify for an NIL deal under the House settlement, but they submitted it anyway. And then when it got declined, then they want to go public and talk about what a bad system it is. You know, I don't know how good a system it is either, because I don't work with it every day. But we've got to have something. And we've got to have people that are willing to abide by the rules. And if they're not, they have to be held accountable. That's for the good of the game. That's for the good of the NCAA. That's the good for the student athlete. Because when you've got coaches and players out there doing everything to the letter of the law, and other people aren't, then those that are the rule abiding are the ones that suffer. And, you know, rules only apply to the law abiding anyway, right? That's what makes the other bunch cheaters. If you haven't done so, go to DutyNobleBook.com. You can get signed copies of all of my sports titles. That includes Flim Flam, Stark Villains, Alpha Dogs, The Dude, Dog Pile, and the personal memoir, When the Bottom Falls. Still get a lot of messages about that regularly, and I appreciate that so much. People telling me that it's helped them, whether it's helped them in their personal lives or it's helped them to understand other people that they love and know that have suffered with addiction. Come float. What is the True S Float Spa of Starkville? Dial 662-268-7601. You get all your questions answered about floating. You can speak to my lovely wife, Dana. And then, you know, take advantage of the Father's Day special that is about to run out. Right? You can get, a package deal for that. And so I encourage you to do that. Give Dad a break. He deserves it. He'll never ask for one, but, you know, he deserves one every now and again. And come join us over at jeanspage.com. The most comprehensive coverage of Mississippi State athletics in the history of the world can be found at jeanspage.com. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way that we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live. Oh, and one more thing. Happy Father's Day to all you dads out there. For those of you that raising your own kids or maybe raising somebody else's, I hope that you have a great, great weekend.